Welcome back. Good to see you all after the break. Sam, good to see you again. Full and rich day already. We're only a couple of sessions in, and we are going to kick into mapping our marketing plan. So we have a good bit of time for this session, and a good bit to cover. So please do go ahead and drop any questions you can in the Q&A. And the team will let me know as they come in, but I'll try and save the bulk of those for the end to make sure we can get through everything and get a good number of your questions answered. All right, so let's talk about mapping your marketing plan. It really becomes the framework. Sam, if I'm going to build a house, I don't just grab a hammer and some nails and some wood, but buy a plot of land and start hammering all together. Not at least not in the ideal. In the ideal, I would sit down with an architect. I would think about what kind of house do I want, right? Do I want sun? Do I want a big room or small rooms, right? And I would lay out that blueprint. And then that blueprint would reflect my personal needs and preferences, my style. It would reflect my budget, obviously, right? What I can invest in that house. It would reflect my timeline, right? Can I wait 6 years for the house? Do I need it tomorrow? And right, the and then all of those things, kind of like a recipe, right, become the ingredients in your marketing plan, right? And we talk about gearing up your growth engine and a marketing plan. When we think about it, we think of that as the growth engine. And this is going to really peel back the conversation, or the onion, peel back the layers of onion in the conversation. My brain just condensed all of that into three words. And that is, a marketing plan is a component in that growth engine that you constantly hear me talking about, right? When we're talking about laying the tracks, each of these is a section. Oh, that was crazy. Each of these is a section of that track. We think mindset, like no big deal. Look at all the places in today's opening. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough money. They're not going to like it. It's not going to be good enough. I'll scare people away. There won't be enough clients. 80% of our growth problem happens between our ears. That second is a differentiator. What are you going to do to stand out in an increasingly competitive marketplace? Third is, who do you want to stand out to? Everyone, I would argue, is too broad an audience, is right. So there's a lesson on each of these. And now you're here at Marketing Action Plan, which is where you're going to frame the house that you want to build. How big do you want to be? There are three questions that we should always ask when we think about growth. We talk about this in the visioning stage, but now we're talking about marketing through a practical, tactical sense. To our opening keynote this morning, we're looking at data, we're looking at the science, not just the sizzle. We're looking at, right, client acquisition costs, lifetime value of a client. Like, what are the economics? Because if I'm going to build a house, Sam, right, I need a budget, and I need to know that I'm going to get the product or the ROI that I'm ultimately looking for. So a growth engine, the way that I define it, and I think this is kind of the holy grail, everybody seems to want one, is a steady pipeline of high quality clients, right, or prospects with a 70% conversion rate in line with your growth goals. If you want four new clients a year, right, then you get four new clients a year. If you want 400, you get 400. It's just how big a diameter, right, you're going to have in that pipeline that you ultimately have to build. So it's not any set number or benchmark. It's, do you have what I call input-output marketing? The first advisor coach we had years ago used to say, like, marketing has just gotten to the point where it's like a slot machine in Vegas. I know that if I decide to do something, I walk up, I pull the handle, I know clients are going to come out the other side. Adam describes it as the way I characterize the way Adam is inputs and outputs. Adam's like, I know that if I show up and I do these things, I know that I'm gonna have a 40% year growth rate. Like, I've got that engine consistently built, laid all the tracks, refined all the tracks, right? Now he's got that going, and now he's in the scaling growth phase, right? That's level three. So level one is laying the tracks. Do you have, right, your touchstone in each of these areas? Do you have an ideal client? Do you have a baseline marketing plan? Are you clear on the channels? Have you built a basic marketing funnel? Your first marketing funnel is called your sales process. That's your no stress prospect process, right? And there's lots of funnels that can and should ultimately lead into your website and from there to your sales process. Your content marketing website, you have to have a website that works. And then, as we talked about, you have to have a prospect process that creates that 70% or better conversion rate. So there's a bit of work to do here. You're not going to be like, oh, I joined Limitless, I'm marketing, poof, there's my 5x growth. If I could do that, I would, and it would be a lot more costly. Right, to our earlier conversation in the choosing your channel lesson, which is the sister complementary lesson, you're farming here, which is year one. You're going to lay the tracks. You need to get some progress, right? Something set in each of these areas. Year two, you get to go back. All right, the mindset piece evolves as you go. Like, is my differentiator good? Adam in year one had white coats, and his podcast was on white coats. In year two, he changed it to optometrist because he saw, right, he had gotten enough confidence to realize he could write deep in more in a more specialized way. Some of you skip straight to that and your deeper is something else. But the idea is, right, then you start really, I call it honing your craft. We start looking at the data, we look at the systems, and we start optimizing them before we go looking for a bunch of new channels and lead gen strategies. We're going to optimize what we have. So this is what a growth engine is, and the marketing plan is essentially where you are in those components. All right. Hello, my name is. If I were a growth dwarf and this were my challenge, what would your name be? So I've been doing this for 30 years. I'm also, right, someone who's built, sold, and bought companies. And grown an awful lot of them. And I can tell you that, like the seven dwarfs, we have seven marketing styles. They're all driven by a mindset, right? You can figure those out pretty quickly. But the fundamental, it's a character type. So I always talk about flashy. Flashy advisor loves to call me and be like, well, I did this and it didn't work. Flash in the pan. Like, where are my results? Cheapy. I have to spend that. I have to spend money. Yes, investment precedes return always. I have yet to find a way around that math. If there is, I will let you know. Busy. I can't. I'm too busy. I don't have time. Right. Or I'll stop it and I'll start it and I'll stop it and I'll start it. Bouncy marketer, right? You show up, you get busy, you stop. That's that yo-yo marketing. Leland, hey, I don't have enough clients. I'm gonna go do some stuff. Oh, I got a couple clients to onboard. Oh, I'm really busy for the next 6 months. Oh, wait, those clients are gone. Oh, wait, I need some more clients. I'm going to go do stuff, right? That's yo-yo marketing. What we want to build is a marketing flywheel so that if you're just standing in the middle, right, in the machine, right, turning, everything else happens around it. Grabby, right? I'll do that. I'll do that. I'll do that. Yes. I want to do everything. The problem is we don't finish, we don't get results. And then, right, we start jumping from idea to idea. Greedy. I don't think anyone in this crew fits this category, but you have seen these people where they are clearly just marketing for the sake of raking in clients and money, and it's fairly obvious. And then dowdy, right? I don't know what to do. They're not going to like it. I'll do that later. Everything's not that bad. Like, we just really don't have the clarity and the confidence to be like, I'm going to market, I'm going to grow. Here's how I'm going to do it. So the question is, which of those marketing dwarfs do you most relate to? You should relate to at least one or two of them. Leland, how about you? If you were going to look at a marketing dwarf, who would your doppelganger be?
Bouncy for sure.
Okay. How about you, David? Who's your marketing doppelganger?
Say, busy.
Busy. So as we talked about this morning, we don't have time problems. We have priority problems. We just haven't prioritized marketing relative to other things. It may legitimately be that those other things are consuming time, and it may mean that you have to put marketing in its place to go resolve those things, going back to the time lesson or the service model lesson or the team lesson, so that you can recapture that time to invest in marketing. All right. So for each of you, which dwarf, right? Who's your doppelganger or doppelgangers? If you had to wear a name tag at an event, and if you're coming to workshops next week, you might get to that says, hello, my name is, and you had to pick one. Which of these compromising strategies? Oh, I do hope you heard that. Which of these compromising strategies are you most relying on? Again, it's probably not just one, but there's almost always a big one that is the loudest, right? Behind dowdy is what if I fail? What if I this? What if I that? Behind flashy is, right? Like I can't be solid. I got to get grounded. I got to get clear. It's a choice that we make about how we show up and ultimately how we market. And the marketing plan framework gives you some guardrails so that you know, like, if I do these things, I'm going to end up with a marketing plan that's going to solve for these doppelgangers. That's what we're essentially trying to do, is we're trying to tame the puppy. Get a new puppy. It's like everywhere. Ah, I got to do that. It's that. And we're trying to do the, if you're old enough to remember, sit, Ubu, sit. Marketing is in its best form, not sexy. It doesn't sizzle. It's not go climb mountains and hoo-yah. It is simple. It's systematic and it's a science-based discipline, right? It's do work, build process, look at data, do work, build process, look at data, do even the creative, right? Ask Carly. It's like who opened that, you know, which headlines really pop out? Which content are they really clicking through? I always have hunches. But we're right, you go back and look at that data. So think about who you most identify with, because growth is a lot of tactics, but your greatest growth opportunity is to set down the beliefs that are keeping you from breaking through those growth barriers. If you go from uncertain to I can and I will, and I've got a community that's going to help me figure it out, I'm going to hit the go button, you're going to be infinitely better off than if you stay in doubty land. So we're going to talk about plans and structure and data from here, but as I am known to do, I really wanted to insert the what's your marketing style from a culture belief persona perspective. And if we can get a handle on that and tame that beast, we're going to be in a much better position to actually execute in a way that will discipline in a disciplined way that will get us results. So we talked earlier in the keynote, if you were there, around marketing math. We look at the lifetime value of a client. Most of you don't do premiums. We have a partner that has a number of advisors that do. So I actually ran data on that. I just include it because I think it's really interesting. I made some baseline assumptions here, right? On the right, you have 10,000 a year in fees, client retention rate of 99, 95%. They stay for 20 years. This is not including referrals. So if every 10 clients referred you one new client every 3 years, Leland, what would that do to the lifetime value of a client? Exponentially increase it. If you look at lifetime value on the premium side, we did some simple math, and then we did the if 10% of clients made one referral every 5 years, that number like more than doubles. Right. So it's not just the client, it's the clients that they can refer you to, going back to that low-lying fruit, right? Making sure that our marketing plan accounts for, right, not stepping over really readily available opportunities. Average advisory firm spends 1 to 3% on marketing, 10% of their time, has a 3% organic growth rate drop from 9% to 3%. I'm a good advisor. I'll show up. I'll do good work. I'll let that good service compound over time in client referrals to get me there, which did work. And it worked beautifully for a lot of people. It didn't mean it was easy or efficient or they optimized it, but it just worked good. That's not happening anymore because now the growth rate is 3%. You account for inflation and client withdrawals and attrition, and you're in a negative growth rate every year. Right. So we really need to start thinking about organic growth because other people are, and that's why those referrals aren't coming in. They're getting scooped up by people somewhere else out in the landscape before they have a chance or even think to ask us or our referral sources. So that's a really precipitous drop that I don't care how big or small you are, you definitely want to be paying attention to that because it means the next 10 years of growth aren't going to necessarily come from that client base as much as they have, unless you optimize client referrals, which is probably the sixth time today I've encouraged you to do that. And now you know why. Again, hard dollars and time and cost, right? So you can see by stage, you're spending more money compared to less money. You also get more scale as you move up the ladder, right? You spend a smaller percentage of the budget, but these firms, right, are much larger. So dollar amounts, you don't necessarily have to spend five times as much at 2 million as you do at 200,000. There's sort of a price of entry, and then you just right ratchet up from there. Marketing can seem complicated and it can seem overwhelming. And I just want to promise you that if you feel that way, just breathe. This is marketing. This is it. You have to find the right message, right, Sam? To that point, like, what's your story? What's the value that you get to uniquely offer that's a little bit different than Leland or Mark or the person down the street? Everyone's got one. Everyone can be different. The fact that your personalities, your houses, your cars, and your clothing are different tell you that, right? So you have to develop a sticky message. The more differentiated, the more sticky. The more you shy away from that, the harder marketing is going to be. Did you hear that? That thing that you do not want to do. You don't want to get selective. You don't want to narrow. You don't want to pick and choose is exactly the thing that you need to do to optimize your marketing. Code for grow less with grow more with less time, energy, and capital. So you can do it the long, hard way, or you can do it the fast, better way. And that's by sharpening the knife. Remember, dull knife, sharp knife. Prospecting, marketing is a tomato. You can cut the tomato with a dull knife, you'll get the job done. It's messier than it needs to be. You can cut it with a sharp knife, and you're like, yeah, that worked just the way that I wanted it to. Right? That's what you're looking for in that growth engine. Two, to the right people. The broader you want to be, it's a safety net. That's all it is. You're on the trapeze and you think if you let go, you're going to crash and burn. I've been doing this for 30 years. I'm not saying you can't execute poorly and have issues because you can, but in 30 years, not one person has followed our advice, picked a niche, and done worse. Knock on all the wood in my office. Let's hope this desk is real. Like, it just hasn't happened because it's a best practice, not because I said so. It's because every ounce of data and experience says if you get clear about who you serve, you can personalize the message, the service, the branding, and the marketing in a way that says, I see you better and louder than people who don't. It's basic math, actually. Right. So we have to give a story to our product so that people can decide if they like that story, that package. Diamonds are a perfect example, right? A Tiffany diamond and a Costco diamond that are the same exact diamond will not be the same exact price by even close. You're packaging what makes you different and the value that you add for a very specific audience. And the more confident you get about that audience, it's like some crazy gravity kicks in. Like, people will just flock to you, not tomorrow, but again, as you build that, right, the track and you get off that runway, you will find that that audience is there just because of the inputs, right? The outputs show up. Third is right place. This is your channels. If your clients are retirees that sit in their house and they don't travel a lot, you should probably not advertise on a travel blog. You should send them a video every Sunday and talk about referrals and other things, right? You really want to get clear when you have the first two places. Now we know where to go. What do they read? Who do they hang out with? How do they solve their problems? What, you know, now we can figure out how to position ourselves in the right time and place. I call that meeting them where they are. That's exactly what we did. We said, hey, we love working with growth-minded advisors who want to elevate their work, wealth, and well-being and build really cool practices and have lives. That's the message. What's the place? Hey, we're going to be in this space. We're going to speak. We're going to write. We're going to show up on social. Those are the things our audience does. And then look at you all showed up here, ready and willing to go with me. Like, let's play in the sandbox. It wasn't a hard sell. I mean, I talked to some of you, but like for the most part, you guys were like, yes, let's go. Right. So that's the kind of trust equity that you want to build. If you've got the right message curated for the right people and you put it in the right place, you will get deal clients. The work is being willing to discern. People will be like, Steph, I'm doing all this stuff and it's not working. And then I'll look at it and I'll be like, I hate to be the one to have to tell you this, but your website's awful. And there's no lead gen. And, you know, like your website literally hurt. I've had to say this to you, like, your website hurts my eyes. I don't know who the client is. I clicked in your contact us form and it just asked for my name and phone number. I said, I wouldn't reach out to you either. So, like, yeah, you gotta have a website, but it has to be a website that works. That's why we're constantly going back to the data, the plan, the data, the plan. What's the plan? What are the tactics? How do we measure it? We, right, then use that to tweak the plan, to measure the tactics. To tweak the plan, to measure the Leland, you see the pattern here. It just becomes a boring cycle of build a plan, implement the tactics, look at the data, tweak the plan, implement the tactics over and over again. The issue is it's really hard to do that if this is your marketing plan. I'll do whatever. Oh, someone called and asked if I want to spend $5,000 to be a five-star advisor in their magazine. Seems like a good idea, sure. Hey, COI called and said, do you want to do an event with me? Absolutely. That's amazing. I got a couple clients. That was awesome. I sponsored this thing over here that they asked me about. I know I'm supposed to work on a client referral, so I've asked a little bit here and there. I do that almost not consistently. I do have some COIs. I try and keep in touch with them. I don't do as much of that as I would like. I started a podcast, but I only recorded 4 episodes. I haven't gotten around to it. I did a couple of articles and like, anybody get the point here? And by the way, spaghetti still tastes good. It still works. I've got a client, they have a $1 billion practice built on spaghetti. They're not happy, they're not optimized, but they have a $1 billion practice built on spaghetti, right? In this business, getting clients and revenue will grow you. It won't optimize you. It won't make it easy, but it compounds, right? Client referrals and the markets have created significant growth for firms. 7.5%, you're going to double every 10 years. At 15%, you're going to double every 7. And at 25%, with markets and some client referrals and anything else going on is not hard, you're going to double every 4 years and 8 months. And so think about accelerating the pace of what you're doing, and that spaghetti gets messier and messier and messier, which is why we really want to teach the marketing plan fundamentals, which is marketing is a bento box, right? We have a few things. They're very organized. They're neatly laid out. We can see everything, all things in its place, right? We know what to do here. So as we talked about in choosing your channel, the sister lesson to this, right? Goals, audience, channel. We're actually here and create your plan, schedule your launch, manage your plan. Those are the steps that we really fundamentally need to go through. You've done these all the way up to this point, right? This growth retreat, this was the first part of the year, among many other things, right? Defining your goals and identifying your audience. This is where we start to then bring form, Sam, to the blueprint of the house. Hey, we know we want it to be in this city, and we know we want it to be on this plot of land. Now we know we want 5 bedrooms, a basement, a backyard that looks like this, right? And then we can get into let's get our build plan going. And that's where we are. So step one is you're going to define that target client. Most of you should have a pretty clear view or be really close. If you don't panic. You need to execute, but this is an area where when we talk about laying the tracks and coming back and refining, like Adam, you're going to want to come back as you get more clarity. Do client interviews, right? Do the client discovery guides, right? Really look at the client inventory tool we have, like try to find those commonalities and narrow it as you can. If you can get it to retirees or business owners or families, great. If you can get it to C-suite execs or female C-suite execs in tech, even better. But again, the narrower and the clearer, the easier it is to differentiate. Yes, it reduces the number of people you have to talk to, but your brain is telling you that numbers are your problem and it's not. Standing out in front of the numbers that you have is the problem, right? So don't worry about all the people you're going to lose out on. Worry about the people that you have or can easily access and how to really get their attention because we live in an attention economy. And it's getting more crowded by the moment, as you all know. So again, there's lessons, there's tools and workbooks and worksheets to help you get this clarity, but you need that clarity to optimize that next level of marketing. Again, right? Demographics, pain points, that's going to show up in your podcast. All this data is going to show up in your sales process. It's going to show up in your outreach efforts. If you were in choosing your channel, we did a deep dive on this earlier. If not, go back and watch that lesson because I really talk about each of these channels. The high level view is like this wheel is your marketing. And if I'm trying to market, I have to apply my time, energy, and capital to get the result that I want. And if I'm Leland and I'm trying to, I've got a plot of land and I'm farming my plot and I hand Leland a water bucket and I'm like, this is your water. And he's got one plot of land, that's great. But then if I tell Leland he's on a swivel and he's got another plot of land here and another plot of land here, and right, got to use the same bucket of water. Is each of those plots of land going to generate a harvest that's going to be as bountiful as if he just did one or had two? Best guess. No. Right. So what we want to do with channel is get really clear on what's our style, right? If you hate public speaking, I'm not going to put you on a stage straight away, right? If you love writing, right, content or things like that are going to be good for you. The idea is to get really clear on which channels, right? Personal channels are more of that relational stuff that you're very used to. Outreach channels are scalable, right? We're extending the brand, us, the trust equity in a broader way. Google Ads, lead gen, articles, blogs, right? Content strategies, PR, media, TV appearances, featured ins, et cetera, right? It's really letting, we're inserting ourselves into people's space and letting them know we're there. And then digital channels is where you're going to get a ton of scale. So that's where you're seeing fast growing firms are generally not fast growing because they're quadrupling their COI strategy. There are some very specialized strategies, but for the most part, what we're seeing is about 10% of the market is using digital strategies. It's responsible for about 10% of growth right now. Really small percentage, but it's growing because if you think about the atoms, except, right, that's where you're seeing really rapid growth because it's scalable growth. So that's where you've got social media, radio, podcasts, webinars, YouTube, right? With your website, it's SEO, sales funnel, right? Again, scale and leverage to drive more leads and process those leads with less human interaction. So step one, after knowing who the client is and what the goals are, is to get really clear on what path you will take to reach people and what path they will take to come back to you. The advice that I always give here is you don't want to go to the buffet and try to eat everything, right? If you've got a bucket of water, that's your time, energy, and capital. You want to think about how you want to disperse it for maximum effect. We talked in Choose Your Channels is you're going to think about percentages based on where you are in the growth cycle. If you're newer and you're like, hey, I need clients on the books as quick as possible to get to my run rate or my goal number, you're going to look at some of those, maybe 80% of your time, Ian, is on those, right? Those near-term marketing, right? Clients, centers of influence, right? Things I can, right? Personal networking where I'm going to generate leads relatively quickly. I might take 20% of my time and allocate it to a scalable, right? Outreach, social media, audio, starting a podcast, doing a blog, video series, webinars, et cetera, right? And I'm building that runway parallel in tandem with my near-term activity. If you're right at 700,000 or 1 million and you've got, ample quote revenue, you're working on scalability and margins and you want to drive, right, more efficient growth, we want to get really clear on the clients we want to grow, the ones we don't. And we might flip that. We might say, hey, we're going to spend 80% of our effort on longer term scalable efforts. We're going to dive into a podcast or a blog or content or whatever. And we're going to spend 20% of our efforts on that near term stuff because we don't really want to double overnight. It'll crush us. And, right, we want things that are a lot more scalable and, right, in many cases, independent of the founder, whether you're younger or older, right? Just if you can grow without having to touch every person, it's a lot more. Right, it's a lot more scalable business model. So the thing I always tell everyone here is some part of your brain is like, that will work for me, that won't work for me. All of these strategies work. All of them have worked for multiple advisors. They won't all work for you. One, you should like them. They should be energy creating, right? They should, if you hate public speaking, like if it makes you want to vomit, you should probably not, you should at least not start there. Now, there is a whole head trash thing. If you're like, hey, I want to be a major influencer, I'm going to be like, Ian, we're going to need to work on this public speaking thing. Like, if that's really the mission, I'd be like, we'll do speech training. Like, no problem. People do that. You can get better at it. I promise. Outside of that, I'm going to be like, Ian, just because I speak, it might like, just that's not your jam. Jared doesn't do a lot of speaking. Tiffany does a lot of speaking. Jared does some. He likes it. He's good. He doesn't want to do it all day. He does a ton of writing. He loves creating content. He just loves it. Which is great because Tiffany loves talking to people about the content and putting it out there. And he's just like, here's a bunch of content, right? So where you spend your capital, if you will, is going to depend on where you are on the growth curve, what goals you want to accomplish, and then how you can best allocate all of your capital, time, energy, and people and money into the channels that are going to be most advantageous. If you do 10 things at once, you are going to fail miserably. Bigger, richer firms have tried and failed. I know. You want to lay the foundation, right? As we talked about, clients and centers of influence, if you do COIs, are the low-lying fruit. You want to make sure you've got good client referral campaigns, good cultivating COI campaigns, which Tiffany and I are going to talk about later. Like if you just doubled the number of referrals that you got or tripled the number of referrals that you got on an annualized basis, for most of you, that would fill up a big part of the growth gap and it would take the pressure off. So we put this pressure like, oh, I got to grow. Have you sat down and just asked yourself, how much would I grow if I doubled or tripled client and or center of influence referrals? For some of you, that's 80% of your growth goal. For others of you, it's just a drop in the bucket and you've got a lot of other work to do. It's the knowing, going back to the conversations around, right, the plan and goals and data. If you know that you can double referrals and that takes care of 50% of your growth or 25% of your growth, and you're going to do these other things over here to fill that gap, it can create a lot of certainty and ease because now you know where that growth is going to come from. And that's essentially what we're trying to architect in the marketing plan, is that level of intention and clarity. The other thing we're trying to architect, which is never going to show up on a workbook, which is why it has its very own slide, is you just have to do you. If you go back and look at the cover of my financial planning magazine, 20, I don't know, 15 or I'm looking at it on the wall over there, 15 or 20 years ago, I'm like in a gray pinstripe suit, no joke, big pearl necklace, arms crossed, like looking at that. They told me, like, look like you know something, people don't. I was like, I do. But okay. It's like, what's the look? It's like very stern, you know. Now I'm all like, woo, here's like that's how I thought I needed to show up. That, right? I was a woman, young, in a male dominated. Like that's just what I thought when I unretired and I was like, yeah, I'm never wearing a suit again like that. Like never gonna happen. Like, and I was just like, this is how I want to show up. This is what I want to do. This is who I want to do it with. If they don't want to have those conversations, they can, like, that's when things got really fun. Not that I wasn't having fun the first time around, but the level of freedom, and I don't just mean financial, it's the level of I really am showing up from a place of right being authentically me and my brand and my voice, and right, this is my spin on how to build a business. Lots of people have one. Figure out what the you part is. If you're more technical, don't try to be all markety. You're going to find an audience that likes to read and hear and listen to more technical things. I promise everybody's got that community out there, that audience. The sheer numbers of the population assure it. If you're like, my clients are ballerinas who wear tutus on Tuesdays, that could be tough. But outside of that specificity, there are plenty of clients for you to find. What you want are the ones that read you, see you, hear you, and go, yeah, I like that. That feels, no one, none of you said out loud, that feels right, that stuff Stephanie's saying. You just felt it. At some point, something you read, something we said, something you heard clicked. It resonated with something you were trying to solve for. That happens best when you're showing up doing it in your way, not trying to be like, sound like, execute like someone else. So that's where you get really honest with yourself. And then you're in a really good position to sit down and build your map, what we call your marketing action playbook. So the playbook is going to take you through all the fundamentals. I also tried to keep it relatively simple because the goal is not to build a big rocket ship to the moon level marketing plan. You won't use it ever. The goal is to build a simple playbook, ultimately lands into a one, right, or two simple page marketing plan, however you like the format, so that you know on a week by week, month by month basis what you need to be doing. Why you're doing it. Hey, this is part of my COI campaign. I'm doing the newsletters. I'm doing that, right? Because X, Y, or Z, that's part of my system. I'm going to go up, right? I'm going to pull the slot. Inputs equals outputs. This is my execution plan, essentially. So we're going to go through, you're going to look at that marketing wheel, and then you're essentially going to start to ask, let me find my little clicker here. You're going to start to ask the key questions. One, show me your budget. So one of my favorite stories is about two senators. One is older, one is the junior. And the older senator is pontificating about how very serious this issue is and how much support he wants to lend to the junior senator. And the junior senator is pretty green, but he's green enough to know when he's being led, right? When being fed a pile, if you will. And he looks at the senior senator and he says, "So, Senator, you're telling me this issue is important to you?" And he said, "Why, son? Yes, it is." And he said, "Well, Senator, you can tell me what's important to you, or you can show me your budget, and I'll tell you what's important to you. So you can tell me that growing is important to you, and then you can show me your budget, time, energy, capital, consistency, discipline, decisions, looking at data, and I'll tell you if it's important to you." Right? That shiny, I just want to think it and have client come in marketing, like that's pretty rare. If we could bottle that, we would. What it is it's no different than Hollywood, right? The overnight success that took 10 years to make. The good news is it doesn't take 10 years to make if you follow the playbook. So step one is get clear on what your budget is: hours, time, and people. If your people budget is, I have 5 hours of my admin's time to do basic marketing tasks, that's entirely different than my people budget is, right, two full-time contractors writing emails and designing social and copy for me. Right. So, because what you're looking at is a plan that you're going to build through the lens of what can I consistently and credibly execute? It's not credible when we show up right with half-baked content. It's not credible when we're not consistent in our showing up. So, we need good quality content and we need good quality consistency because that's where trust equity is built. If I show up saying, doing right, the right things that feel relatable, speak to your needs, all that connection stuff, that trust equity, and I show up consistently when there is an opportunity, I will have access to it. So, what's your time? What's your capital? And what's your people? So, two, I want you to do some calculations. You will be inclined to skip this. Don't. So, we're going to take a second and do it together. This is the difference. I want you to calculate your revenue gap, the difference between your current revenue and your target revenue. So, everyone, take a piece of paper. Write down your current annualized revenue, right? What would it likely be at the end of this year? Now, the marketing gods aren't blessing you, but they're not cursing you either. We're just going to hold a steady state through Q4. My dog wants attention right now. Now, what's your average client size right now? And or if you've made a decision to up it, go with that. But right, what's your average client size right now? And then how many clients at that size do you need to fill the revenue gap? So if your goal is to get from 500,000 to 750, right, that's 250,000. If your average client size is 10,000, right, that's going to be 25 clients. If your average client size is 5,000, it's going to be 50 clients, right? So one of the things we want to do is get really clear on what's our current growth rate, what's the gap, and then we can look at how to optimize it. And oftentimes we don't even have that information when we're doing our spaghetti level marketing, right? That's our spaghetti strategy. This is the bento box. If I know that I need 9 clients, it's very different than if I need 45. And often we need far fewer than we think we do, thinking about, right, what if we just doubled client referrals? What if we went from Tiffany's entire original marketing plan, which if you're in cultivating COI, she'll be happy to tell you about. Her original marketing plan was stop doing all that stuff that you're doing with 70 hours a week that's not working. And we're going to focus on generating 5 COI relationships that refer 5 A clients a year. That's our new mission. And interestingly enough, the mission worked. We went from everything to this becomes the focus because we got really clear. We didn't need that many clients. We just needed good ones. So let's really focus on the place we can get those good clients fastest. Right. And then calculate the new client size needed. So if you're going to, right, if you're like, hey, I don't like 50, I want it to be 25, I'm going to have to go from 5,000 to 10,000. That informs, right? That helps to inform your business decisions and your strategy. So how many clients do you need to hit your 3-year goal? How many clients do you need to hit your 1-year goal? So now you're going to ask yourself questions like, how important is growth to you? Really? Is it a thing that you say and you're like, yeah, I want to grow, but I'm just going to let things, right? The markets and clients compound things for me and I'll throw a little spaghetti against the wall. Are you like, hey, I want to be like Adam and Taylor and Ben and Tiff and Tanya. Like, I want a 3X in 3 years and I'm on a mission. How am I going to do it? Because that's, I'm going to be honest with you, is an entirely different level of execution that I'm comfortable and I'll do things as I get to it. Right? How much do you want to grow? Get really clear on that. Not because you got to pick some giant number, but remember, you're going to, at 7.5%, you're going to double in 10 years. At 25%, you're going to double in 4 years, 8 months. Like, you're growing regardless. You're just going to decide, right? Do I want to turn it up or not? And how much? How much time will you commit? How much money will you invest? When you think about growth, particularly for those of you that are a million and up and growing, but true for everyone. But the questions I ask every client, right? Particularly the billion-dollar firms, is how big do you want to be? How fast do you want to grow? Like, how fast do you want to get there? And the one that no one ever asks, how much risk are you willing to take? If Ian's like none, like I don't have a ton of money and I don't like, I just gotta like, okay, there are some things we're gonna do, but we're not gonna 10X overnight unless we get really creative. If Ian's like, hey, I've got, $10,000 and I'm gonna devote, 15% of my time and I'm gonna execute like a machine, then I'm like, all right, let's play. We can do some stuff with that for sure. Right. So you got to get really clear because otherwise it's a guessing game. It's spaghetti strategy. And again, it works, which is why, right, firms grow between markets and referrals and a few things. You can do really good in this space. But what you're all after is really freaking awesome, right? That optimized time, income, and freedom while delivering awesome deep value to clients means we sit in that space of being a lot more intentional. It's then going to take you into the goals section as we talked about. What's the new revenue goal, Leland, based on the new client, right? The average revenue, how many new clients is that? How much new AUM? How much of that's coming from referrals and CUIs, and how much of it's coming from other places? Right. And then we're going to talk about how we're going to measure. Am I going to look at these data points? Right. So that I can make sure that all that stuff Stephanie talks about, right? Look at the plan, monitor the data, tweak the plan based on the data. Like, all of that happens here. Your client audience, right? You guys have heard us talk about that time and time again. Goals might be, right? They should be clear and specific. Grow is not a goal. Sam, here's $5. My work is done. Right. Bring in 10 clients a year at $10,000 each, build 5 CUI relationships that refer 3 times a year, triple the number of client referrals, generate 1 new lead a quarter from my emerging digital strategy because I'm in year one. Those are goals because I can work with them. If I need 1 new lead from my digital strategy, I have to have a digital strategy. What am I going to do? What's likely to get right now? From that, the plan flows. Here's the really cool thing. Most of you, a good chunk of you, are younger. I'm going to say 35 to 55. A third of you are with me. I'm 51, but I'm going to put myself in the 50 plus group. A handful of you are 60 plus. And the good news is it doesn't matter what group you're in when it comes to marketing because it's all the same. Everything that you're afraid of, like, oh, I can't do blogs or I can't do this or I can't do social, it's the same thing you've always been doing. It's just a different medium. Webinars are seminars on Zoom. That's it. Blogs are things you used to send in the mail, right? Content are the white papers and the articles that we used to send in the mail. Like, direct mail is now email. Cold calling is now search. Print advertising is, right, social media and Google ads. Association and trade shows still exist, but now you've got LinkedIn groups and focus groups and, right, forums and like, it's people connecting. Remember the core principles in the beginning, right? People, right message, right time and place equals right client. In choosing your channels, you're just picking the paths that you want, right, to walk with people. And that's that next section of the playbook that we talked about, right? So there's a section on digital marketing, right? Website, video, audio, social media, right? And then, as I shared in the choosing channel earlier and here, You're going to have specific things that are unique to you. I can't guess all of them. Leland's got some cool stuff. He's got this whole thing he drew out for me in a video. It was awesome. You should ask him to see it. It rocks. He's like, "Is it right?" And I'm like, "No, you pretty much nailed everything we taught you. Like, that's the model." But sometimes you need help. Like, what can I do? If and I didn't want you to sit in that space of, "Well, I don't know," because I don't know stucks you every time. It's also a strategy that your brain uses to avoid figuring it out because we know that you're capable. So in digital marketing, they're just examples under each of the channels. Like, hey, in social media, maybe you update your profile, you engage with your followers, you write, choose one or two platforms. So we gave you some starting points there so that you can make sure to have some next steps as you're building your plan. Of course, right, reach out, come to calls, go to Tribe. We're happy to give you feedback to help you tailor it and customize it. But the idea is there's some good stuff here to make sure you're getting started. Sample playbook. I'm going to establish my target client. We're going to go with retirees because we're all very familiar with them. I want secure retirement, family focus, right? So I've got my target client. I've got my website. Retirees ready to follow what sparks joy is my theme. I want a clear space, speaking to my employer's subspecialty. That allows me to look at my content. It's going to be, right, social media campaigns around retirees for, based on their employer. Monthly retirement ready newsletter and a podcast for retirees on employer, right, employer-based plans. I love to fly fish or fly, right? So I'm going to do some flying events with my clients and COIs. I'm going to do community and company events. I'm going to do some stuff with the local pilots, right? See if I can do some networking there. My centers of influence, TPAs, taxpayers, right? So I'm going to, right, put my campaign in place and make sure I'm just consistently dripping, not going to try and change the world. Going to consistently drip on those relationships. And I'm going to really try and scale up our outreach and our brand presence with workshops and webinars. I'm going to experiment with like live and in person, see how that goes. Twice a year, we're going to drive all those lead gen and emails and people that we have online to webinars or workshops called the five retirement mistakes not to make with your right insert employer-based retirement plan here. That's a lot. But it's not a lot, right? Notice there's no lead gen, there's no blogs. Like we've got our core strategy. Content's going to be a part of most of your core strategy, as unless you're staying completely in the personal space. And even then, you can use content to leverage relationships. And we've got one whoopee new experiment, right? We're going to do workshops and webinars. We're not doing them now. So even if we fail miserably, we're actually no worse off. And if we meet with some success, now we've got right that track laid, Leland, and we can refine and build from there. And over a couple of years, right, we're going to build a whole webinar strategy where we just know when it's time to do a webinar, we're going to have about this many people, and about this many are going to show up, and about this many are going to do a call, and about this many are going to hire us. Like it's going to be that obvious in about 3 years. If you do the work, lay the tracks, refine, right, hone the craft, refine the gears, go deeper. So that's how you get from goals and budget, some basic client math, choose a few channels, and then what you can essentially do is go around the wheel and build out your marketing plan. And I don't mean that, Leland, Ian, Mark, like include every section on your marketing plan. Like I'm going to do some branding and some PR and some media, and I'm going to do Google Ads, and I'm going to hire a lead gen, and I'm going to write some blogs every week. And no. But I want you to look at again where you are optimized, especially if you're gearing up for marketing in the beginning. Don't do too much. Don't do stuff that you hate. Like set yourself up to win. Do a few things that you like consistently. So you're going to go around the wheel and be like, hey, does my vision and goals require brand, PR, and media? If you're Adam in the optometry space and you're trying to really own, right, the top end of that space, yeah, you're going to do some of that. If you're Bob with a practice in Kentucky who's like, hey, I got 100 or 150 clients I'm trying to fill up and it's really local, then you're going to be much more in the personal networking and community than you are in PR and media, right? It's a complete overkill for that scenario. So, but you do want to go around the wheel and evaluate what role should that play? Could that play in your marketing plan where you are now? Feel free to get excited about the whoopee stuff. You guys know there's whoopee stuff I still haven't gotten to. We're too busy growing, like literally can't even get to it because we just grow every year. That's a high quality problem to have. So the idea is go around the wheel, get really clear on what you want to do, You also want to think about the difference between reach and impact. This is one to one or one to few versus one to many or many millions or billions now in the digital age. They're both impactful. One or the other can work. They are most potent together. For example, if I have an email list and I bought that email list, my trust equity with that email list is zero. If I'm doing webinars or seminars, standard protocol dictates I send them a bunch of emails marketing webinars or seminars to them, but our trust equity is zero. So I'm going to get, right, a 2.6% response rate or something. Again, if it's a targeted audience and a targeted list, right, it'll be better. But right, if it's just random emails, it'll be really low. If I drip on that list for a period of time, I'm going to do a webinar on the five mistakes that tech execs make with their RSUs. And I drip on them seven times. Seven is the magic number at which your brain believes that something won't eat you and might actually be good. By the way, it's when kind of the right monster defenses go down. Let's say I drip on you seven times. Doesn't have to be big stuff, could be a quick article, could be a video series, could be anything. Then I send the email inviting you to the webinar or the workshop or to take me up on the offer or to get the download, right? You're going to see that typically, you're going to see that response rate go up because our trust equity went from zero to maybe seven, maybe 30, depending on the quality. So if you're that person that's like, Steph, I did it. I have a blog or I do this or I do that and I'm not getting the leads. Going back to, I think it was in choosing your channel, go back and watch that lesson in the Q&A at the end because there's list quality, right? Who is actually getting your message? There's headline quality, whether it's a seminar or a webinar, like what is, right? What is the offer? If it's an email, it's a headline. And then what's the content quality? If you've got a good list, but you're not giving them content that they aren't going to engage with, you're not going to get a lot of engagement. So you want to, right? And there's data points to track each of those things. The idea with, to me, is you want to stack them. So my rule of thumb is you want to spend about 70% of your time in what we'll call systematized, scalable marketing. I can send an email out to my COIs once a week, once a month, once a quarter with some pithy, potent, amazing content. That's pretty easy in this day and age. Personalized from me, still pretty easy. And I can do it automatically. I don't even actually have to think about Bob or Mary, but it can totally look like I did, right? I can have a list of 50 people that my assistant has, and they're just calling, making sure I have two lunch meetings a week. Like there's a lot of way to scale the personal stuff, but it's never going to be as scalable as I wrote an article and I got 5,000 people to read it. So that's where we want to look at about 70% of our marketing, we want to be scalable. Whether it's digital or personal, use COIs and podcasting as an example, right? Or webinars. COIs, right, is 100% personal for most of you. It should be 70% systematized. Here's my plan. I'm going to go to lunch with two people a week. Here's that list of 50 people that I hand to my assistant. I'm like, I don't care who it is. This is the list, right? Just email and call people and be like, hey, Leland wants to meet with you. Make sure those two lunch slots are filled every week. Right. So I can go through that piece, but I ultimately need to keep that relationship going. And that takes personal effort unless I have COI campaigns in place. Right. Then there's a lot we can do with content marketing and videos and case studies and study groups, all kinds of things. Right. So different conversation, but there's a lot. Hopefully, you're hearing a lot of scale in there within thought and intention and front. It's no different than a podcast. If you put the time and energy into building the episode, we're building the COI campaign on front, you can launch it and leave it for the most part, right? So that you're then spending 30% of your time on specialized activities, one to few. If I have an email list, whether it's a client or a center of influence or prospects, and I'm dripping on them consistently with high quality content, good headlines, et cetera. Now, when I show up personally, when I take those COIs to lunch, when I call those top clients, when I engage with those prospects in a 20-minute learn more call, right, or a small group setting after the fact, now that personal energy is multiplied and magnified because I've built trust equity underneath it. I'm not starting at zero. And so that's where, think of a podcast. People call Adam up. He followed our sales process. We were just talking about this. He's doing the workshop next week. And he's literally gone from right, learn more, call, discovery, first presentation meeting to like they get on the phone with him in 45 minutes, they hire him. They literally remember like when they're ready, they'll be like, can we just skip all that and hire you? Because there's so much trust equity built up in the podcast, right? That one to many, that when he then does anything, right, makes an offer or has a call around conversion, it's highly impactful, way more than if they just saw Adam's ad in the paper and called him, right? He's got months to years of relationship equity built up by listening to the podcast or reading the blog or being the center of influence on your content drip list, right? So the point there is you want both. You want to be really clear about what you want to standardize and systematize because you can do a lot more of it than you think you can. Those lunches are a great example. It's not tech driven, could be, by the way, but just handing a list to someone and saying, make sure I meet with these people, make sure I call my top clients once a month. Like that is a level of systemization that's still going to increase your efficacy. So, reach is about the number of people that you can ultimately connect with. Impact is about the potency of that connection. You can be very impactful at scale. You can do a webinar that crushes it. Right, but you're typically going to have trust equity going into it that's going to make it better versus just doing things cold. The same way we don't like cold calling, we don't want a cold email or cold webinar or cold blog outside of the first ones, right? Outside of getting started, we are ultimately trying to decide between reach and impact. So think about how you're going to use your time in your plan. And you're going to want to keep it simple to start. So this is an example in one of Michael's blogs. That translates the idea really nicely. If you think about your channels, inbound marketing, referrals, hey, I just want to focus on establishing credibility, right? That brand outreach, awareness, that's the outreach, right? Brand part of the wheel, thought leadership. It might be, I'm going to set up a blog. I'm going to join the, right, Accountants International Association. I'm going to 2 times a month, right, writing into your practice, right? It's the thing I'm doing. Attend chapter meetings. Like, notice how we can just break it down. I'm going to do one guest blog a month. I'm going to join a committee. I'm going to do a presentation to a chapter in Q3. I'm going to pitch this. Like, it's a really simple, straightforward plan based on who's the client, what are the channels, what's my basic plan and timeline, how much energy do I have, right? This is pretty straightforward, not a huge and heavy lift. But notice how you could print that out, hand it to your assistant, and actually make sure that you do it. So the idea is to kind of look at your overview timeline and then build your one-page marketing plan. So that comes out of the playbook. The easy way to do this, there's some samples in the library for you, right? So that if you want to get started, but you're literally going to look at those three areas and then think about, again, think about your quarters. And then week by week in my digital channel, what am I doing? Hey, I'm posting to social, 3 days a week. Brand outreach, right? I'm doing. So once you've got the quarter, you can literally break out week one. In outreach, I'm doing one media outreach, right? You give your assistant a template email and you're like, send this email out to one media outreach every week with an article idea offering to do an interview. Like, now we can take this high level plan and start to chunk it into weeks and then build a, hey, if I'm going to do this, I need to have one COI meeting a week. I need to spend 2 hours a week on working on the podcast notes. If I, right. So that's the basic idea. Strategic. What do I want to accomplish? Who are the clients? What channels, time, energy, capital, right? Those budgets and goals. And now, based on the channels and the clients, we're picking specific activities on a quarterly schedule and then breaking that down. Again, this allows you to get really granular. You can stop at the level that works for you. But the idea is to end up with a one-page plan that you say, this is how I'm going to intentionally grow this year. I'm not going to spaghetti strategy. I'm going to bento box. And here's what I've learned. I've been doing this for a little while now. I've had people call me and say, I'm doing it, like I'm not getting clients, no one's calling. And I'm like, what are you doing? And they're like, well, I'm not doing a lot, or I'm not doing the right things. And I say every time, like literally real stories, people stressed out. And I'm like, look, are you working the plan? We built your one-page plan. Have you been working it? And by working it, I mean it's like call one top client a day, right? Call one top COI, call three, write an email to three new CIs making an intro, like whatever is in your plan. I'm like, have you been doing it? The answer 90% of the time is no. And this is what I say every time. You go work the plan for 30 days. If you work the plan will work. If you don't work, the plan won't either. But if you do it for 30 days and it isn't working, you call me and we'll figure it out. And do you know how many times someone has called me after 30 days? In 30 years? Leland is right, zero. Because most of the time, the problem isn't what's in the plan. We love to judge it and use it as an excuse to stop, or it's not working, or great, if it's not working, stop and fix it. Anything else is an excuse. Do you think that I wake up, I come up with a marketing idea, and oh, the sky's part, everyone comes, there's no science, there's no failure, there's no learning? Of course not. But we get up and we work the plan. So strategy to tactics ultimately boils down to accountability. So here are the simple secrets to effective marketing. One, you have to mean it. It cannot be like a wish. It needs to be a goal that you're committed to. So you've got to make a time commitment. It's got to show up in your weekly schedule. If you say, I'm going to meet for people with lunches or I'm going to work on a podcast, I want to see that blocked on your calendar. Show me your budget. If you do that, you will grow. I can't promise you it'll be perfect or pretty, but if you commit the time and the effort, you'll bump your head, you'll bruise it, you'll move on. You'll bump your head, you'll bruise it, you'll move on. And like Adam and Taylor, who were struggling to market when they started, you become a master at it if you so choose. You don't have to. You can delegate it out and be a master at something else. But you need to make a commitment. Two, you need to build your map, that marketing action plan with the team and the budget. It's a four-page document. It is not a 90-page plan. I have made it simple for you to stay in those guardrails, but you do have to sit down and do it. Third is the overwhelming odds are you're going to sit down and create a content calendar. Even if you're doing clients and COIs, content is so scalable now, you should be using that on some kind of nurture campaigns, videos, case studies, et cetera. Update your prospect process if you need to make any tweaks to that, right? Because you want to make sure you're converting 70% or more of the clients. Otherwise, you're just finding leads and losing them. No fun in that. And fourth is kind of circle back to number one, make it a job. If it is not a job, like a commitment on your calendar, the same way a client is, you won't do it consistently. And if you don't do it consistently, it won't work. And I know this because the secret to really good marketing and growth is on the back of your shampoo bottle. And if you look at your shampoo bottle tonight or tomorrow morning, you will do it. Get in, turn it around, and in very teeny tiny small print, which I have to put on my contacts to read these days, it will say, apply a small concentrated dose, lather, rinse, repeat. It does not say pour the whole bottle out on your head, jump up and down, do a whole bunch of hullabaloo, and then go, why isn't my hair clean? Marketing is very much the same way. We ultimately want to get really clear on who we are marketing for, what our marketing message is, what our marketing plan is, right? Today's construct. And then we want to get focused. That's what you're doing when you're building out your plan. And then you want to get to work, which is what this conversation is about, is you can build that plan, but if you set it aside, if it is not in your calendar, and if it doesn't show up in your CRM or your project manager or Asana as tasks, it doesn't exist. It's a wish. And wishing, last I checked, was not a really effective strategy for growing your firm. Other related lessons, websites that work. Doing your online marketing funnel, creating your annual content calendar, COIs, cultivating plans, ideal client. Like there is a lesson for every single component. That's the point of Limitless, is right. We know what that model and that blueprint is, and we're laying out that map and that playbook for you. And your job is really just to pick up that playbook and put it to work. And if you put those playbooks to work consistently, you're going to elevate your practice. And in this case, you're going to grow in a way that helps you align with your goals. So in terms of next steps, again, as always, some great reading you can follow up on. You're going to want to go to the lesson, look at your marketing action playbook, build out your marketing action plan, and then read and follow up on it, any of the related lessons, website, content, COIs, et cetera, because that's where you're going to get the specialized knowledge about how to excel at each of those channels, right? So choose the channel, build the plan. then dive into each of those areas to get deeper specialized knowledge as you're laying the tracks, right? Don't go watch the podcast session today if you're not there yet, but you can put it in your plan for next year and know that that resource is there, right? So you can start to watch it and lay the tracks on that. Taking action, make sure, as we talked about, it's about schedules and systems. That's the science of marketing. There's a little bit of sexy sizzle in there. It's like 10%. The other 90% is, can you be really boring consistently? Can you just show up and work the plan over and over and over again? And I don't know about you, but I've been doing this a very long time, and it has been my experience that just about the time that you want to put a pencil in your ear, you're like, I got to give up. It's not working. That is absolutely just about the time when it really starts to work, because you are, right, like a farm. You are planting seeds, you are tending to the soil, you are doing the work to make sure that you get that harvest on the other side. So my experience has been investment precedes return always. If you work the plan will work. Step number one, ladies and gentlemen, is you have to build a plan that is clear and aligned with the practice and the goals that you want to create. All right, we've got about 25, 30 minutes and time for questions. So I'm going to stop our screen, jump into chat. Carly, Leona, are there questions in CBIT, or should I just jump into chat?
There's a few questions. Debbie has a question. She's having issues with her mic. So it was she's having a hard time following the math that you were doing at the beginning of the lesson and was wondering if you could talk through that again.
Is that the client acquisition math or the revenue goals math?
I'm not sure, Debbie, if you could put that in the chat. And then Leland was asking about calculating the cost of advisor time. I think Leland can unmute.
Yeah, on that initial slide, the one that you also had in the keynote, it was like marketing spend and then cost of advisor time. And I was just trying to figure out like how do you calculate, is it just my hourly rate divided like times the amount of hours I
Yeah, so
spend?
if you think about, I look at return on time, which is the time. Hourly rate is interesting, but it takes your revenue, think cost accounting for the right tax and accounting people in the group, and it divides it evenly over the years, right? So if I generate $1 million in revenue over 2,000 hours, right, that's $500, right, $5,000 an hour. Return on time says that's really a lovely thought, but you don't generate revenue with all of those hours. You generate revenue with a much smaller percentage of those hours, and that revenue has to cover the overhead for everything. So we look at return on time. So you can look at it two ways depending on how you want to do it. As an employer, you could look at it as your employee cost. Like, what do you cost the firm divided by your hours is your effective marketing rate, right? To take you from here and put you on marketing is basically your payroll, right, at your effective hourly rate. The reason I look at return on time is it's an opportunity cost. You can pay someone at your effective hourly rate to do marketing, but they can't create the revenue that you can create, right? So the opportunity cost is really your return on time, and I use right that $500 to $1,000 an hour. So again, that's going to skew your cost. If you're spending 20 hours a month, it's not really 20,000, but what it's intended to do is get you to think about the fact that there is an actual cost to your time for marketing. Because what you're trading most of the time is time and money, right? Buy it versus build it. If I go out and I buy a book, a business, I've got revenue and I've traded capital. If I build that client base over 5 or 10 years, I'm trading time, a lot of time and a little bit of capital when I buy something, right? Even if it's like a Google ad or a lead, I'm trading capital up front to, right, to condense that time. And so that's where you're always deciding time versus money. And the lesson there is don't discount the value of your time. So your minimum effective cost is your compensation divided by hours at an hourly rate. That is a gross understatement of your value. So if you're starting out, you're taking home 150 grand a year, I really don't want you to be like, oh, my hourly rate for marketing is $75 an hour. Bad. Right, it's the opportunity cost. So on a minimum, you're looking at right a lot more. But that's your starting point. If you use $500 an hour, like if your client base was full and that's what you were generating, $500 to $1,000 an hour, every minute that you weren't working with a client and you were marketing, you'd have to be generating multiples of that to make it worth it, if that makes sense. For
It does.
you, for unless you guys are getting really scientific, I'm really looking at percentage of time, and then your results are going to make sure your marketing rate, the cost of your time, is paying off. Are you going to spend 10, 20, or 30% is a more important decision than like what's the cost of my time. You can generally calculate the cost of your marketing time by taking your salary rate divided by your hourly rate, divided by the amount of time you spend marketing and your hard costs, and that will give you your baseline cost. Again, there's a lot of opportunity cost that that does not reflect. Ken, did that help, Leland?
Sorry.
Kenneth, you had a question. What percentage of revenue on average should advisors spend on marketing? Oh, should is always a loaded question. Any coach will tell you that. Advisors on average spend 2 to 3%. Top growing firms on average spend 4 to 6%. Unless you get into the right, you get into the tens of millions, gets percentage goes down as you get bigger. But in general, it's a very loaded question because it's just going to depend. What Leland spends on marketing might be wildly different than what Mark spends on marketing, depending on how they're marketing and their life cycle. Mark might be in a, I'm being very selective. I'm taking, five awesome clients a year. And Leland might be in like, hey, let's find our ideal client and let's stack the decks with them as quickly as we possibly can, please. Right? Different goals and objectives. 3% is a minimum. But again, if you're at 150,000 in revenue, that's $4,500. Like, okay, if you can spend 15, please go spend 15, right? If you can, you can. If you're low, I'm always going to tell you to spend as much as, here's the answer, as little as possible, as much as needed. Yeah, it works on a lot of things. As
And what
little
percentage
as
of
possible. I want to spend as little as money as possible on marketing, but I want to spend absolutely as much as is needed. And that's what we're looking for. So Leland, for you and for most of you, it's going to be how much hard capital can you really allocate? For most of you, it's not going to be a huge number to start, but it's going to be a number. Two, it's time. Can I allocate 10% of my time, 20% of my time? The value of that time is important, but it's not the big lever that you're going to change, right? We deal with that on the return on time equation. For marketing, I want to make sure that you're allocating time and you're doing it. By the way, throwing more money at marketing does not ensure you results. If you're like, oh, Steph said 15 is better than five, only if it's intentional and it works, right? Throwing $10,000 more at a problem and getting a little bit more lift is absolutely not worth it. So you really want to make sure that you're getting ROI on the time and the dollars that you invest. Does that help a little bit? All right,
Yes.
Ken, great. Did we get Deb's mic or question sorted out?
Think her mic's still not working, but I believe her question was answered. Debbie, if you want to put that in the chat, let us know. That'd be great.
Yeah, if it's about the revenue, right? If you're at 500,000 and you want to be at 1 million, that's 500,000 is the gap. Your average client size divided by 500,000 will tell you your average client size. So that tells you how many clients you need to fill the gap. Then you want to look at baseline things like client referrals. Okay, if I doubled those, how many clients would that be? How much revenue? Okay, now you've got less of a gap. Hey, I'm going to do that with my COIs. If I doubled or tripled those over the next couple of years, what would that look like? Okay, now I have even less of a gap. Hey, I actually have 28% of my gap. I actually have to like go out and fill with brand new stuff. Hey, that's way less intimidating than I thought. What's the brand new stuff, right? Insert, choose your channel lesson here. Pick your channel or two, invest that time. For all of you, it's your big decisions are going to be time, money, and people. That's why they're in the budget. So think about the people leverage. Hey, it's not just dollars. It's, hey, can I apply $500 a month to a marketing contractor to get them to do these things consistently for me? Could I spend $500 a month on a marketing assistant on Upwork who's just going to manage my list and write, send emails to people and make sure that I get stuff scheduled on my calendar? Like, think about every way that you can create leverage. Time is a leverage point, right? I invest it, input time equals output. We're trying to maximize that with the quality of what we do, right? Capital is leverage, right? I can buy things faster than I can time or build them. And so it's really about how are we pulling all the levers right along the way to optimize the work that we do, which as you're starting to see can save you a lot of extra effort. We have to go find all those new clients because we're not optimizing them, or we're bringing in the wrong ones, or we're losing them in conversion. All right, did I get Ian's question? Ian, you wanted more details on COIs? You there?
Just generally, sort of talking about COIs as being kind of very basic fundamentals along with client referrals. I think I've gotten like one lead from a COI ever, so I'm clearly doing something wrong. But I'm just like, to me, COIs are, CPAs and estate planning attorneys. And my general sense is that those, someone's looking for an advisor, that generally like don't even think to go ask their estate planning attorney. So I'm just wondering what I'm missing.
COIs, like any channel, are really one that you've got to kind of want to do it, and two, that you've got to want to optimize it. The challenge with most COIs, CPAs are the pinnacle of this by all accounts, but attorneys and others fall in the same category. CPAs by nature are not salespeople. They are by nature analytical, diligent, cautious, conservative. They don't meet a new person and go, "Oh my God, we're so alike. Like, I love you so much. Let's go refer to each other." They say that you have those meetings and they're like, "Oh, this is great." Or you have a shared client and they're like, "Yeah." And then everyone's happy and then off we go, which is the big break. I mean, everyone's like, "Oh, I went to lunch and they said they were going to refer and they never did." Why? Because they're as busy and lazy and comfortable as all the rest of us. And by that, I mean, when I worked in a practice, everyone was like, "Yeah, let's do it." And then a week later, there'd be no referral. And then 3 weeks later, there'd be no referral. And I'd be like, "What's going on?" And then I realized they're all crazy busy and distracted. And they, by the way, are not in Limitless. So they're like, "Yeah, that sounds like," they have no ability to go through their client base and know who has a financial planning need. They have no system for that. Most of them don't have a defined model meeting or surges or even meeting prep. They're like looking at the file from last year and going, "Oh, whatever." Most accountants, crazy to this day, don't have, they all have a tax planning checklist. Do you know that 90% of accountants still don't have financial planning questions on their tax planning checklist? Even if you're not doing tax or financial planning as an accountant, you think you'd want to know if your client's had a financial planner and we're doing some financial planning, like all the stuff on that Schedule K is coming from somewhere, right? Like, we don't build a system to build credibility with COIs. And as a result, we give up before we earn their trust. CPAs in particular are the show me, don't tell me. And I cannot tell you how many advisors have approached CPAs, attorneys, insurance agents, blah, 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 and been like, "I'm so awesome. You should give me all of your clients." I can't imagine why I wouldn't stop everything and give you all of my clients. Like, it's very much a me proposition. The number two thing we do is we love to say we take the team approach, but we lie. We just lie. We get the client. We don't even call and tell them what happened after we had the intro call. We don't call them and tell them what happened after the meeting. We don't consult with them on an ongoing basis about what's, we lie. And I don't mean like we lie in a mean, malintentive way. We fib and that we mean it at the time, but we don't run our practice in a way that actually allows us to provide that level of care and attention. And so we drop the ball and then we wonder why they didn't refer to us. So it's like dating. Like, if you're married, you probably didn't go to your spouse, have a lunch, and be like, someone in the call was like, "I did." And I was like, "You're blowing my story." And they've been married like 20 years. So if you're that person, please don't answer. Everyone else, like, my husband took me on a date and then he took me on another one. And then I had to say yes. And then I had to call him. Like, there was a lot of back and forth to build that relationship equity. And then once that trust is built, there's no effort. Like, Tiff and Jerry, like, Tiffany just gets referred. Like, they are like completely sympathetic. Like, there's no like, oh, it's like they're partners in this stuff. It's like an extension of the firm. And they've built that over years. And they've done it by consistently, incredibly showing up longer than everybody else. Now, again, there's personality and there are some CPAs, they're just not going to fit. And I have clients that are huge charismatic personalities, and I have clients that are like, "I can't talk to any." And I promise you, there are CPAs that fit those same profiles. There are accountants, there are attorneys, there are asset protection attorneys, there are divorce lawyers, there are business coaches, right? So as Tiffany will tell you, there's a lot of COIs that we don't pay attention to. entrepreneurs, right? Business coaches or consultants, great source of referrals because they also tend to have those people who are in the process of helping them get their stuff together, right? So again, if your clients are retirees, business coaches are going to be a really poor source of leads. So go watch or today listen the Cultivating COIs lesson because very much like plan and service model, it is about dripping consistently, thinking about specialized versus systematized, right? How do you drip and then show up in really impactful ways? And then how do you basically build campaigns to move COIs, irrespective of type, what I call up or out? You're essentially going to put them in a campaign with a combination of systematized and specialized, personal and scale. And then over a period of time, that's either going to elevate the relationship. If I take you out to dinner 9 times, we're either going to move from first base to second base to third base, or we're not. Notice how I caught myself there. It was going to get colorful and I caught it. I was like, first base, first base. That you have to be responsible for the entirety of the relationship because no matter what they say, they don't care about you or giving you clients. They're busy trying to survive in their own world. So I literally, when I worked in a practice, the way that I got people's attention and I was be like, hey, I know that we've talked a lot about referrals, but we're all really busy. It's been really hard to get that organized. I built an internal organizer that listed our clients and all of their centers of influence so that I could build a database to keep track of all that. Is that something that you would like me to share with your team? Be happy to sit down with them and show them how I did it. And then we could write blah, blah, blah and do it. And they were like, oh my God, that's so amazing. I'm like, I know. I literally just got useful. That's all I did. I just sat in their lives and I looked for somebody. So I would go to lunch meetings and I would always have a next step, whatever it was. I would have an article in my pocket. Like, oh, like if I had nothing else in common through the whole meeting, I'd be like, yeah, client inflation's a big, yeah. I'd be like, oh, it's a great article. Do you mind if I send it out to you after the lunch? No, that'd be great. Now I've got a follow-up. I've got a reason to call again. Like you, so there's a lot of little like tactic and strategies, but the reason is we don't play the long game. Two, we don't take the team approach. We say that we do, but we fib. When we hear Tiffany and I talk about it, you're gonna be like, yeah, I didn't do any of that. And third, we don't know what our value proposition is in the relationship. We're like, well, like Tiffany will sit down and be like, do you want to have a referral relationship? Yes or no? If you do, let's like it's super awesome. But she's like, I'm not messing around and like I'm just gonna get and they have meetings, like let's each find 3 people to at least have a conversation about over the next 3 months. Like she took our process and was like, I'm putting meat on the bone to this baby. You don't have to get that hardcore to start when you're starting relationships, but if you find, for example, as she did, that there was a lot of talky chatty. She's like, I'm not looking for friends. I'm looking for fabulous referral relationships, right? I want real partners. And so you really can set those expectations in the conversations, and you're going to separate the wheat from the chaff. You've got a personality. Some people are going to be like, I really like Ian style. Some people are going to be like, he's smart and I don't like that guy at all. That's okay. There are people that don't call me. They don't like my style. I used to worry about those people. I used to try to change my style for those people. And then you know what I realized? The best thing I can do is share my style because they don't call me. So the only people that call me are the people who like our approach and style, which means I don't have to hold anything back, period. But there are some people that I have amazing, like I can call anyone in this space. It's very awesome after 30 years. But there are people that I could call for anything. For anything. Like, hey, I'm doing this. Hey, I'm doing that. Like I can call Mark DeBridge and be like, will you do my workshop summer series for free? And he's like, sure. Like that's not common. Right, that's relationship equity, and that's what you're building over time. So to play the long game, take the team approach, build the plan, work the plan, build the plan, work the plan, shampoo bottle. With COIs, it's get in the track, work the track, add a ton of credible value, create offers, and then it's up or out over 6 to 12 months. Out, by the way, just means they go on the mailing list and the system loves on them. So you can do a ton of marketing that way, but your personal time, that 30% quarter over quarter, you're going to pick 5 or 10 or 20, depending on how many you have, or you're going to go find new ones and do X number of intro meetings. And like your service model and your client, your sales process, you're going to build a whole process and campaign for that. So you're not winging it. You're not spaghettiing it. You're bento boxing. That was a very mini version of the CPA lesson, cultivating COIs.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. All right, Sam, did you have another question?
No, mine really was a follow-up to Ian's, and I realized it's more appropriate for the cultivating COIs discussion.
No worries, no worries. You guys, I can't believe it. We have 4 minutes left. I did not run over. What other questions do you have for me? Anyone doing anything on that's applied marketing consistently? Any success stories to share? I can't see all of you right now, but they're like, no, that's why we're in this lesson.
I took the growth engine lesson from last year's summit and really built out, which, you know, Stephanie, because I sent it to you, kind of an ideal growth engine. And I would say started really working that COI side, as well as running webinars and lunch and learns and things like that. And this summer I would say this is probably quicker than I anticipated, but I've started seeing referrals begin to trickle in and seeing things like that. So even just yesterday, we signed a new client from a COI referral, which was encouraging to see, like, okay, these, like, you show up,
it
you
works.
Just keep doing it. You
it's
track
a,
it.
Adam talks about the flywheel, and it really is that flywheel in the beginning is harder to move. It is, right? You're going to feel like you're working on it for months. You're going to feel like nobody's listening. You're going to feel like those COIs, you know, nod at you and don't do anything. And to Leland's point, if you show up consistently, right, what the parts of it that are working will surface. Those are the parts that you could ultimately, again, pay attention to, focus that specialized time on. What we know is if Leland doesn't start, Leland can't improve. And so by doing it, right, A, he's better off. B, remember that 3-year runway. Year one, you're laying the tracks. Your regular stuff's going to come in and you might catch some things for sure. But the sky's not going to part with 59 people out of the blue because you posted your first blog or your 19th blog or your 79th blog. Somewhere in there, that tipping point kicks in. And again, that's how you're getting traction. If you're doing a blog a week to one audience with 100 people on it, that's wildly different than, right, building that list by 50 or 100 people or hundreds of people a month. So remember, a lot of your marketing is list building in lead gen, even if it's, hey, your CPAs and your COIs are like, yeah, I referred. And then you want to sit down with them once a quarter and go, look, I know you guys always refer. And 90% of people just get too busy because, right, planning is really proactive business, not an emergency business. Can we just check in once a quarter on, like, reach out to all your COIs and be like, let's just check in on who you've referred in the last year. And I can tell you if they've called me or not, and we can think about if we want to do anything with them or not. Like, that alone will keep you busy for a while. You know, what I always tell people around COIs is warm COIs. Like, all your clients have COIs. Some you know, some you don't. But like, if you just got that list and you made them the approach, that would keep you busy for a good 6 to 12 months, like genuinely. So that first layer is build the tracks like Leland did. Your regular stuff's working. If you have no regular stuff, right, you're gonna be able to build the tracks faster and get that flywheel turning. But then you're going to see, as Leland's saying, it's going to start to get little traction. Clients are going to come. They're like, oh, I read your blog. And be like, oh my God, someone's actually reading it, or someone's listening to that podcast. Like, Adam will tell you, like, it was crickets. And then someone sent an email and said, hey, I really like the podcast. He was like, holy heck. I mean, I know it says people are listening, and then the numbers just go up, 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 right? Because you learn and you tweak and you learn and you tweak. And that's where, right, Leland, around year two, year three, if you keep that up and you're refining along the way, you're not setting it and forgetting it, that pipeline is going to be bigger, wider, and it's just going to be consistent. And you're figuring out, these are my inputs. This is my machine that leads to these outputs. If I tweak these inputs and I tweak this machine, I tweak these outputs. Oh. So Adam and Taylor and they literally went from, I'm not growing, it sucks, I don't know what to do, marketing plan, client profile. Like, they were as, like, befuddled and overwhelmed and do I really have to as you. And if you listen to them now, they could sit side by side with me and talk to you about marketing and channels, and Taylor's got websites and data. Like, it's insane. They have become masters of their craft in 3 to 5, like in 5 years, they are like marketing, like they are like, we're going to grow. Here's how we're going to do it. Spend this money, hire this person, go. They don't go, I think it's going to work. They're still strategic. Should we start a community? Should we do this? But the whole like clients in, clients out, they're just honing it at this point and optimizing what are already really incredible numbers. That's the goal with the growth engine, Leland. So you're really well on your way. And it was a great video. He's like, what do you think? And he literally mapped it all out, followed it, like filled it all in. I was like, I think you should do that. That was my advice. Like, good job. Go do that. That is not often my advice, Leland. Usually I have lots and lots of feedback, but you nailed it. Did a good job. Glad to hear it's going well. Any other success stories before I let you break for lunch? All right. Who's going to stand between everyone and lunch? That was a loaded question, was it not? All right. We are going to come back. Let me check. We come back in 30 minutes. If you're on my track, Ian, I hope to see you there. I'll be doing Cultivating COIs. I think Tiffany's joining me. And the other lesson, if you're not doing that, is Websites That Work with Adam and Greg, which is also super awesome. Greg is one of our website partners. He's my preferred partner. Like, they just get it. They know how to build them. They get the branding piece. They get the data piece. So either of those you can listen on the recording. One of those you get to choose. I will not take it personally if you go to websites. Otherwise, you guys have a great lunch, and I'll see you in about 30 minutes.